Blog Talk Radio.
Going to be some great show. I'm back from Indianapolis, Indiana. Let's see. Okay, it's like 6 p.m. It's a nice day. The weather is nice here in New York City. There's no rain. It's sunny skies. It's warm. Just perfect day. Well, okay, I'm back to the show now that I briefed you on what's going on here. Yep, back from Minneapolis, and most of the show is going to be with Talking Italian, and as well as chilling out at a spa. And, well, first we're going to have author Carol Fienzi talk about her book, The Stonecutter's Aria, which is available at Aparto Publications. We'll get that later on, of course, to make sure you know. And Ralph Tambasco, who's the president of the Indiana Italian Heritage Society, and he's going to tell us about what it's all about and what's going on. Then we have Jeff Hudson, who's the owner of Old World Gondoliers, and he's going to take us on the Indianapolis Canal and sing for us as well. And then we're going to chillin' out. Now going to Studio 2000 Spa and speak with owner Kevin Williams about the history of this building and what the day spa has to offer, and I shall remember. But first, of course, you know, we got to get a word from our sponsor. And there we go. Oh, yes. What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. Yes, brownies. And you can get these delicious brownies at www.brownies.com. Yeah, well, you know, they're out there in Phoenix. You could probably get in the stores there, but if you're other than that, you just got to go on the web, and they're worth it. So, well, I'm going to open up the mics because we got some people on here. So I got Carol. Are you there?
I'm here.
And I got Ralph. Do I got Ralph?
Mel, how are you?
Okay. How you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Okay. Well, let's start. Ralph, you're the one that introduced me. What was this thing about the Stonecutter's Aria? Why you gave me that book in particular?
Well, I think that book, which was written by one of our board members, a long time Italian Heritage Society members, Carol Fienzi, I think is a very well written account of her family's history migrating from Italy to the United States, and in particular, the history of that family as it relates to the Italian-American community and its family experiences here in Indianapolis.
So in other words, she was one of the board members, is that what you're saying?
Oh, she is a board member right
now. She is a board member.
And
as opposed to a board, B-O-R-E-D member.
That's absolutely right.
Okay. Okay, well then.
Carol is never boring. She's on the board, but never boring.
Thank you, Ralph.
Okay, so Carol, tell me about this book. What made you even decide to write this book?
Well, it started out as an intention. A few years ago, I needed to take a career sabbatical from a very hectic job that I had, and I basically bought a one-way ticket to Italy and took some time there. And my grandparents had recently passed away, so my intention was to honor their memory. And
what part
so
of Italy,
on this,
by the way?
They were from Tuscany. My grandmother.
Oh, okay.
Family came from Carrara, which is where the marble quarries are located. And my grandfather was from the Etruscan village in the southern part of Tuscany. So they had told me stories as I was growing up. My grandmother engaged me a lot with my Italian culture in many ways, through opera, through cooking. She took me to Italy when I was young and introduced me to my family. So when I took the trip there, I started just writing the stories. I didn't really intend it to be a book, per se, at the time. It was just a way for me to try to preserve some of my family heritage. So that's how it got started. And then
so
one thing led to another, and it turned into a book.
Yeah. So describe, like, the stories. Tell me some of the stories that that they related to you.
Well, you know, I remembered two or three very significant ones. The big story was, of course, during their immigration, when they traveled, their ship hit an iceberg on the way over. And they had been separated from my great-grandfather for 10 years while he was working in the United States. And so they had a very traumatic experience, which caused the normal two-week voyage to turn into almost a month. And so I heard that story many times. And then also, when they first came to the United States, the first place they landed was in Montgomery, Alabama. And in the early 1920s, when the Ku Klux Klan was very prevalent in that part of the country, they found themselves affected by the prejudice and the racial discrimination and outright brutality. And my grandmother was 12 at the time when she came over, so she was old enough to remember these incidents. And one of the stories that she told me was that, you know, all the women in the house would lock up the house every night and pull the blinds down, and just they felt very intimidated by the hatred, the brutality that they saw. And in fact, one of their neighbors who they made friends with, an African-American woman, her son was actually lynched by the Ku Klux Klan while they were there. And that precipitated them moving the family and ending up in Indiana. So these very dramatic stories were part of my childhood and made an impression on me in terms of the courage and bravery that they, like so many Italian-Americans, I mean, all the stories are the same in a way, but they're unique to the family.
So now, were they stonecutters when they were in Italy? Is that what this?
Well, my great grandfather studied Gothic architecture, and so he was an artisan. And when he came to America, I think he had some dreams about being able to continue to do that work. But when he came in the early part of the century, he faced many years of just basically working in quarries and doing lots of manual labor. And it wasn't until the early 1930s when America saw a renaissance of Gothic architecture that he got to see his dreams come true and actually be able to work on beautiful buildings in, for example, part of the Federal Triangle in Washington, D.C., the Corinthian Columns. That kind of detail was what he had studied as a youth. So yes, he was a stonecutter, but he was really an artisan, and his he got that training in Carrara before he immigrated.
So, in other words, while he was in the quarries, he was just dealing with breaking up all of those stones and whatever they do.
Have
you ever been to a quarry yourself?
Oh, well, I've been to Carrara many times.
A quarry.
Into the quarries, into the marble quarries, yes.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in Indiana,
so
we're famous.
So this is all, the quarries had all marble stones. Is that what it was?
Well, in Italy.
Yeah.
But when he came to America, he worked in granite quarries. And then, of course, in Indiana, we're very famous for the limestone. I mean, most of the important monuments in America are made of limestone that came from southern Indiana. And that was a natural place for him to find work. So, yes, I've been to those quarries, you know, many times. There are still many Italians working there.
I used to have a job actually going to quarries myself to check out the stones, et cetera, before they got shipped. So I've
really?
Been to many quarries, yes.
Yes.
And so at what point, so there was a point where I guess that they were taking, I guess, the stone and creating, I mean, you know, doing the creations. Where was that, in Italy or when they got here?
Well, he really just studied in Italy. I don't think he really was able. He was pretty young when he came here. So, you know, his training was in Italy, but he worked in limestone when he came to the United States.
Right.
And you know, the quarry work was just manual labor. But then when he got to go on these crews, he was actually part of the ones who then did the carving. And I mean, he wasn't a sculptor, but there's an in-between, you know, layer of skill of being a stone artisan, and that's really what he did when he came to America, but not for many years.
And so I think you had commented, I'm not sure, there are things that we can actually see of his work?
No, not real. I mean, you could. I mean, the Corinthian columns at the National Archives building in Washington, D.C., or he was on the cruise that created that. One of the more personal things that one can see today that he carved was there is a college in Pittsburgh, and it's a women's college, but it was formerly one of the mansions owned by Andrew Carnegie when he was the United States treasurer in the 1920s and 30s. And he carved, my great-grandfather and his son carved seven sandstone, red sandstone fireplaces in that mansion. And many of Carnegie's mansions no longer exist, but this one does. And it's intact. So that, you know, it's a fireplace. It's not a sculpture, but that was the kind of work that he did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. But yeah, but it's still, you know, something that one can visit and say, oh,
that's right.
That's my dad, my father, my this did that thing. You know,
right.
That kind of thing.
Yes, and he also worked on the chapel at Duke University. There's a Gothic chapel as part of that, and many Italian artisans have their hands on that, and he did a lot of the Gothic tracery in that church.
So when you using the word aria, why aria?
Well, aria is the Italian word for air, and that's the term that Italian composers use. We don't call the musical singing pieces in opera songs. They're called arias. And so because my great-grandfather also did some amateur performances in the Carrara Opera House before he immigrated, and I've always been a lover of opera, and my grandmother introduced that to me, I felt like when you listen to especially Italian opera, it is a very emotional. I mean, they don't hold anything back usually, and I felt like a lot of the words and music just, you know, was a very good way of showing and conveying the emotion of the time. And the stone really represented symbolically for me their trials and the heaviness of their lives, but then the aria, because it means air, and it's usually a thing of real beauty, it was the thing that lightened their lives and added beauty to their lives, because they had big dreams coming over here. So I felt like those two elements balanced the story.
So do you have any like recordings or anything of something of him singing for your own self? Or?
Unfortunately, I don't. You know, think about, I wish you did, but no.
Did it get passed on?
Well, the closest thing we have is that his son also had his voice, and his son, who's my cousin, has a beautiful voice, and he does sing. So I didn't get the singing genes, but yes, we have a couple of family members who love to perform.
And is the singing in Indianapolis or in New York, by any chance?
Oh no! It's just very like at church ceremonies, at weddings, and things like that.
Oh, okay. But in case you were hearing him, I mean, is he doing this in Indianapolis? Because I noticed, like,
no, it's not. It's not really. He's not really a professional. I mean, he's got the voice, but it's something he just loves
just
to do.
Just for the hang.
Not something he just does for anything else, but just because he likes it.
Okay. Do you have any favorite operas
yourself? Oh, well, I'm very partial to Verdi and Puccini. And, in fact, I think Ralph's going to have something interesting to talk about with Verdi pretty soon. But I do love the melodic, probably the more traditional operas. We're seeing La Traviata here at the Indianapolis Opera. Has a very fine season. And we're seeing that performed this weekend.
Oh, that's great! And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a restaurant I went to in California with that name, La Traviata, they had a woman singing from there, and she of course sang from La Traviata as well.
Right, right.
In terms of the book, is the book also in Italian? Is it available in Italian as well?
Well, that's one of my hopes. I make a couple of trips to Italy every year, and I have had the opportunity of meeting some folks who might help me get that done. You know, I do have a lot of Italian woven through the book, but, you know, my family is dying to really read it over there. So it would be nice to have that done. That's in my plan, my future plan, yes.
When it's translated, I know, like, for instance, like, is there a dialect that it has to be? Does it make a difference in terms of, you know, like if I had somebody who's Italian say, hey, will you translate this for me? And he said, well, I'm from southern Italy. It won't be the same. Does it make a difference? Mm-hmm. I'm just curious.
Yes. It definitely makes a difference. I think that that there, you know, the dialect is a very important aspect. And it would be, yes, I would be careful about who would translate the book.
Oh, because I don't know if you know, I write for an Italian-American newspaper, too.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so, you know, I could say, hey, I'd send it on to my boss and say, hey, translate this or translate some. Or when I write the article, I could ask somebody to, like, translate the article into Italian so it'll come out in English and the article will come out in Italian as well. I could try to do that.
It's kind of tricky.
Yeah, I guess it's like take some quotes or things like that from the article.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. We'll see what I can do. I'm lucky I can translate things that I can deal with English, let alone another.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got one paper that I'm writing, a Spanish newspaper, and they turned around and just said, oh, we want it in English, and it has to be in Spanish as well. I send it off to McAllen, Texas, and they send it off to Monterrey, Mexico, and then I get it back.
Wow, that's a long way.
Because, hey, I don't remember a thing with Spanish. But anyway, mm-hmm. So now how long did it take you to write this book?
Well, from start to finish, about 4 years.
I see. So, in other words, it was first when you first went to Italy and, like, got the information and, you know, from your family, and then came back, and then you started at the keyboard, I guess. I can't say
well,
the
actually, typewriter. I wrote my book by hand. And
oh,
then
you
I
did.
Put it, then I input it into a Word document when I had a manuscript. But when I was in Italy, one of the things, my goals was to separate myself from, take a break from the hectic job that I had at the time.
Should I
and
ask
so
what
I,
it was?
Well, that's fine. Yes, I worked. I was involved with a commercial real estate firm in New York. I had sold my company to them. I had partners, and we sold it. And I ended up working for them, you know, as a result of the acquisition. And my boutique business kind of went from that to some, you know, a big corporation. And while it was okay for a while, there was parts of it I really didn't care for. So I decided that wasn't for me. So when I went to Italy, I decided that I was going to be pretty much unplugged as much as I could. I traveled alone, and I spent about 5 months over there. And it was a great experience. So when I was starting, like I said, I was just writing stories. So I would just take, you know, paper with me and have a nice long lunch and just write what I wanted to write. And it just evolved after that. I mean, I came back from that trip, and then I started making more sense of the stories and ordered them. And then I hired someone as an editor to kind of help me with it. And it just sort of went from there.
Well, that's great. Well, and in regard to the photos, were the photos from Italy from that are in there?
Many of them, yes. A lot of them are family photos, and some of them are archival photos. But there's sort of a mix of those. But they're my family. Most of my family photos, yes.
That's great. By the way, I did a press trip to Italy, and I found out what pizza really tastes like.
In Naples?
What pizza tastes like, you know? And
I know,
like,
but...
And now I don't eat the... Oh, yeah, that's where I went. How'd you guess? I went to Naples, the Amalfi Coast, and to Sorrento. And I said, okay, can I come back then? Come back to New York, and, like, I'm never ordering pizza again. Because they don't make pizza like that, you know?
That's very true.
That's what pizza's supposed to be. Oh, I always wondered, you know. Same thing with gelato, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but,
I agree.
Yeah, you get spoiled when you find out what things are really like. But anyway, so what are you like? What are you doing now? Are you just concentrating on the book and getting the book out?
Well, actually, I'm adapting it to a screenplay. And I've been working on that. Yes, I'm making good progress on that, and we'll see where that goes. But it's an interesting and fun project for me to keep it going. I do presentations to groups when my big, I think my mission, not my big mission, but my mission, personal mission, is to encourage people to preserve their family rituals and stories. And because I'm not a genealogist, my book is actually written as a historical fiction,
right?
Because I wanted to write the stories, and I wanted that's what I wanted to convey. And so I do a fair amount of speaking engagements to groups to encourage that. In fact, I'm teaching at the Chautauqua Institution in August about how to take genealogy to story level, because I think that's what people really remember, and I think that's what we want to pass on.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I wish I knew my family. You know, the mm-hmm. thing is that, and it's funny. It's interesting when families are coming from Europe. It's like you never say no one is a European American. You ever notice that?
Mm-hmm.
It's no such thing as Euro American. No one ever writes that down as something.
Right.
But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if you're from Europe, your family's from Europe, they always like maybe pick the country as opposed to the
mm-hmm.
continent. You know?
Mm-hmm.
When some people, I guess, they come over here and then they say, I don't want to talk about the old country. So no one ever knows. Okay, fine.
Right.
But
right.
So Are you, so now you're working on this screen adaptation of this. So now it means like writing the dialogue. Is that what happens?
Yes. Well, yes, that's what happens. It's a very different process from writing a book. So, yes, I'm working on it. I've made some really good progress. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, that's really cool. Yeah, if you want to, in terms of arias, I'm having we have there's a gondola in Indianapolis, right?
Yes, I do. Uh huh.
Well, Jeff is going to come on, and he's also going to. I had never gone on a gondola. I mean, I went on two of them, one in Florida and one in Long Beach, California. And it was always like in the background, you had the tape music and of Dean Martin, you know, in the background kind of thing. And I never had a gondolier who actually was singing, you know,
yes,
a cappella.
Mm-hmm.
And I went,
mm-hmm,
oh, this is like for real. You know what I mean? So when he comes on, actually, he's gonna sing as well.
Good.
But so now, and what is your involvement? As I want to get into, as we're getting into the Italian Heritage Society. What is in your involvement in the society?
Mm-hmm. Well, as Ralph said, I'm one of the board members, and I really enjoy being a part of something that is about heritage. I mean, we're not the Italian Club, we're the Italian Heritage Society, and we are continually looking for ways to bring, you know, to educate and to inform as to, you know, where we came from. I think it gives people a sense of belonging and
mm-hmm.
And you know, the immigration stories. I mean, most of our members who are Italian have a grandparent or someone in that generation that made this voyage and made a life here. And so to the degree that, you know, we can capture those stories, and we do it in many different ways. We do it socially. We have cultural events. And because of my book and what I've spent time reading about is to encourage, you know, the sharing of those stories. I think it's a very powerful and worthwhile thing to do, and I it's part of our mission. So that's why I'm on the board, and it's fun, and we eat well.
did you join the board because it was there, or did you come to Indianapolis and say, "Oh, look what's here"?
I've lived in several different cities, and any time I've lived in a city, I've always sought it out. I mean, I lived in St. Louis because I lived close to the Hill, which is the Italian neighborhood. I was very engaged with their group, and when I lived in New York City, I was a member of the Order of the Sons of Italy Manhattan Lodge, and got to know. This particular lodge was filled with artists and writers and musicians, and that was a wonderful association. And then it just was natural. Plus, you know, our meetings are held in the Italian parish area, and this is where the immigrants came to live including my own great grandparents when they moved to Indianapolis. So it's a neighborhood. It represents a lot. So for me, it was just something I just gravitate toward.
So there's a particular neighborhood in Indianapolis that's, as you say, is an Italian neighborhood?
Well, it's anchored by the Holy Rosary Parish, which was the Italian church established.
Right, which is where?
And is on the east side, not the east side, it's close to downtown and sort of south. Would you say, Ralph, southeast?
I'd say south, yeah, I'd say near south side.
Okay.
Yeah, and many Italians lived in that neighborhood and still do. So, you know, the church kind of anchors that. We have a very nice street festival the church sponsors every year that we're a big part of. It's an Italian street festival. So yes, there's a neighborhood. It's a historic district.
Okay, so your book is available. It says Aperto?
Well, that's the publisher. You can buy the book on Amazon.
Oh, good.
That's the easiest
thing. Oh, on Amazon.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's good. So we just you actually just Google. You can either Google your name or Google the stone cut is Aria.
Right.
Or, thank goodness for Google, huh? So it makes things easier. So Ralph, now so let's tie in with the society. So
sure.
Tell me how you got involved and what is it all about?
Well, I've lived here now in Indianapolis for probably better than 25 years. And originally being from New York myself, I was very involved in my Italian-American community, having been raised and seeing all the sights and sounds of those things that are common to that ethnic group. And in particular, I was raised among those who were involved in a group known as the Congrea de Sant'Anillo. And in those groups back in those days, you had societies that were built on just by gender. In other words, the men were involved in one, women were involved in another, but the whole idea was to hang on to that identity as to who you were. Having come to Indianapolis, it was very clear at the outset that the numbers, insofar as people of Italian background, were far limited than what I had known back in New York, and for that matter, in most other places, such as Philadelphia, Boston, Chicago, and so on. So when I found the Italian Heritage Society, I clung on to that as dear for dear life, so to speak, because it was a way of making sure that I felt comfortable with a entity that was going to help preserve my heritage, and certainly something that I could pass on to my son, who is now there with me, and now my grandson, who just turned 2 years old recently. And the society itself was developed, although there had been prior ones in the past that unfortunately did not really end up going a long distance. This particular one that we're talking about was born out of a Columbus Day commission that was celebrating the 500th anniversary of Columbus back in 1992. When that was completed, this then morphed into what was known as the Italian Heritage Society of Indiana. And its mission has been to preserve and promote all aspects of Italian culture. And it's kind of twofold in nature. On one hand, we recognize while we are the children and grandchildren of Italian immigrants, we also recognize that there are some that are still here from the other side and some newer immigrants that have come over. So we try to preserve that traditional Italian-American heritage that we grew up with and at the same time fold into that some of the newer aspects of Italian culture that have evolved since our families have immigrated to the United States.
I see. So, and what is it in terms of, like, as the president, like, what is your, you know, is your responsibility to running the whole darn thing?
Well, hopefully it's to help keep things on track. Everybody has their assigned or designated roles and what they're doing, and hopefully I play that pivotal role in just helping to make sure that everything is being coordinated in a proper fashion and that the job gets done.
Okay. You know what I'm going to do right now? I'm going to take, well, sort of a break, but at the same time, I got Jeff on right now who's going to sing. Jeff, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
You want to sing for Carol? Carol's dying to hear.
Oh, please sing for me, Jeff.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. Of course. This song is called Forget Me Not. Non ti scordar di me, la vita mia legati a te. Io t'amo sempre più, nel sogno mio romanico. Non ti scordar di me, la vita mia legati a te. Che sembri ogni donna il mio cuore per te, non ti scordar di me, non ti scordar di me, la vita mia legati a te, io t'amo sempre più, nel sogno mio romanito. Non ti scordar di me, la vita mia legati a te, que sobre mi do nel mio cuor te non ti scordar di me.
Isn't that wonderful?
Bravo. Bravo.
Bravo.
nothing against Dean Martin, but that's so much nicer than hearing when the moon hits your eyes, like, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, good.
That's so wonderful.
That's very nice.
Yeah, I arranged this, Carol, for you.
Thank you. Molto grazie, bella.
There you go.
And by the way, Jeff, can you sort of translate what it says?
Like the song really speaks to don't forget about me, for in love I have nothing without you. Yeah, non ti scordare di me. Yeah, it's a beautiful song.
It's really interesting because when I sign books, I always put don't forget on there when I sign them. Usually I do, because my grandmother, every time she sent me a note when I was growing up, she would write non dimenticare, which means don't forget.
Right.
And it's just been like a theme through, you know, this whole thing since I've written the book. So that was a perfect song, Jeff.
Yeah.
Well, you know, things don't happen by chance. I think we're all supposed to be where we are at that very moment, and so it's interesting how we've all come together in this, and I've really enjoyed the process.
Yes, I have too.
Yeah, actually, it was funny because as I was looking things up and I come across a society and then I'm talking to somebody from tourism, I said, did you hear about this? And she says, no. And I said, okay. And then I wind up saying, oh, let's all gather over at the gondola, you know. But I got everybody connected now, which is wonderful. I understand there's something like that's arranged like now with gondola and events with the society that you're doing.
And Meryl, what you need to know is that in Indianapolis, it's more than just a street festa that you heard about and that you see in other cities. But there's so many things that are going on. You know, one of the things that society also focuses on is that there was a chapel that was built in a military area in the southern part of Indiana, about 30 miles south of Indianapolis, called Camp Atterbury. And during the Second World War, there were Italian prisoners of war there. Being they didn't have a place to worship, they asked for permission to build a chapel from spare materials that were there on base. They were granted that request, and they put together this small chapel complete with fresco. They used berries, indigenous berries, and other pigments that they got from flora that was there around the area to help paint the fresco itself, and now it's become a landmark. And every year, we celebrate in front of that chapel the fact that this was put together by these Italians that had come to Indiana. Interestingly enough, many of those had also stayed in the United States rather than being repatriated and had married various Italian women Indiana women that were here at the time. And in fact, it's my understanding that there is currently a movie that's in the progress of being made based on that experience. But that's just one other thing that we celebrate here as part of the society's commitment to perpetuating Italian culture and preserving it.
So, and give me some ideas, like what else? What else you do? I mean, I gather that it's all not street festivals. That's what
right.
I gather.
Quite right. Well, and we also do other things as well, such as we celebrate Columbus Day in a very big way, which is probably not surprising, but we do that in a way that, again, promotes and preserves Italian culture by recognizing the contributions of certain individuals that have given to the Italian community, Italian-American community. And we try to recognize that on different levels. We try to recognize it generally for those that have given of themselves continually in one way or another, and we recognize them as Italians of the Year. Another level of that is Italian Business Person of the Year, because there are various inspirational entrepreneur-type individuals that have made successes themselves and are examples for others to follow. We have, for those that are interested in learning the Italian language, we offer classes at a very reasonable rate where no one else can really offer them. And we do that because we want people to experience that joy of learning that language. We have a scholarship program that we offer Italian American students, and we do that on various levels, not just a student that's going on to college, but it could be some other educational experience that they're going to be involved in to simply further their interests. So we get involved in that. We have an Italian American golf tournament every year, and that primarily helps to fund that scholarship event. This year, we have something special. We've been noting the 150th anniversary of Italian unification. As those history buffs out there will probably tell you that from the date of the fall of the empire of 476, Italy was never a unified nation again until about 1861. So this unification anniversary celebrates that. And part of that celebration is that we're bringing in the Giuseppe Verdi Choir from Mantova, Italy. And they have performed all over Europe over the past 60 years. And this is the first time they're coming to the U.S. In fact, they're going to be in New York first doing a performance. And I can't tell you exactly where the performance is going to be, but I believe it's going to be there in the last week of August. And then from there, they're coming here to Indianapolis. And with that, they have a wonderful library over there that dates back to the 1600s that has so many different works and pieces that are in that library. And we are told that we're going to hear one of those pieces that have never been heard before. So we're very excited about that.
That's great. When you get the information on where they'll be in New York, of course, you'll send it to me in advance, and I can get this in Giornal Italo Americano.
See, I'd be happy to.
Hey, if you want, you can even write it in Italian too for this.
Sure, we'd be happy to do it.
Yeah, then the people in Italy won't have to try to translate it. They'll say, "Oh, look." That's really great. Now, and again, I'm curious, like when you're giving, you know, lessons in Italian. Again, are we talking in terms of dialect? So what is there, like, one particular? It's like when I went to school and you learned Spanish, you learned Castilian. That was it. I mean,
right.
There was no dialect. There was one Spanish, and that was the end of that.
You know, when you talk about the Italian language, I think we go back to the unification issue again. Because for all of those years where Italy was not a unified nation but was broken down into city-states or being subjected or subjugated by different foreign powers, that's really how the dialects took hold all through Italy. And that's why you had such a wide variety going from the north all the way down to Sicily that was so different that sometimes Italians couldn't even understand each other when they spoke to each other. So since unification, the one dialect that has become known as the official dialect is that comes out of Tuscany. That has been adopted by the Italian government as the official language or dialect. And so that is what is taught in Italian classes. But as everybody knows, in any Italian family that you've grown up in, you learn the dialect. My family is from south of Naples, and so, you know, clearly, you know, we were brought up with a true Neapolitan dialect. And so there are little things here and there that really separates one part of Italy from the other in terms of that. But overall, yes, the language class is taught in terms of the Tuscan dialect.
Right. You know, it's interesting. It's like when I'm at, going to an Italian restaurant and I'm ordering the food, I guess I must have picked up, I guess maybe the Sicilian dialect, I guess, because I never say like the whole word. It's like
sure, and that'll happen in the Neapolitan accent as well. Sometimes there's that last syllable or that last letter that somehow gets dropped off. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's congeal. You know, it's not
right.
Congeal-y. You know,
right.
And it. But that's something I had learned, I guess, in the area where I'm about a mile and a half away from where John Gotti lived.
Uh-huh.
No, so I guess I'm not sure what whether that was Sicilian or not, but because of, you know, the restaurants, et cetera, that's the kind of thing I picked up. Although I have to admit, now I'd rather go for Northern Italian. I think the tomato sauce gives me agita.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and it's a funny thing. I said that to somebody, agita, and they said, "What does agita mean?" And I said, You know, and it's fun. It's like you pick up words. And I really forgot that that's really an Italian word.
Well, that's true, but I think, you know, that's... Yeah, that's one of the interesting things about America, because of all the different groups, we're kind of a mosaic. We often, I think, overuse the term melting pot, but really it's a mosaic. It's little pieces of different cultures pieced together, and the interesting thing about that is that we all, on occasion, borrow from one another, and those little words or terms you're talking about creep into everybody's vocabulary.
Yeah, and it's funny because when you go out of New York City, and it's like, one of the things that people picked up a lot in New York City is Yiddish expressions.
That's
right.
And
it's funny, when you go out in New York City, it's like I heard them say, like somebody would say, no one says spiel, they say spiel. And I'm thinking, spiel? You know, they don't want to pronounce the whole word. And it's, you know, and I find things like that, I find that interesting. And especially when... The use of the word schmuck, and people will think to myself, you don't know what that word really means, and you're saying the word. You look it up, and it means
that's
penis,
right.
You know?
That's right.
I'm sorry, but, you know, that's what you're saying. But it's funny. But see, what happened, I guess, in the immigration, both my grandparents, one was from Russia, one was the other side was from Germany, and I guess that's what I say. No, nobody wanted to talk about the old country. So they didn't speak Russian. Oh, they didn't speak German. Everybody spoke Yiddish. So I didn't, you know, get it of somebody being from another country.
Right.
It was just some language. So it's like, it's okay. I don't necessarily really want to go out there to Russia or Germany anyway. But that's, you know, I would check out Italy. You know, that's a nice place to go.
That's right.
What I would love. Do we want to hear another song? Don't you just love the hearing singing? Jeff,
well,
you want to throw in
Well, I was going to say one more time. Jeff, can you do it?
Jeff, can
sure,
you do it?
Sure, of course. La bruna gondoletta a presta barcaru. Oltre il canal m'aspetta colui che ben trovo. Se così amor tu sai, devi inondarla. E quel che tu vorrai, prometto e te dona. La bruna gondoletta presta barcaro, oltre il canal m'aspetta, colui che ben io vo.
Let's all go off to Italy. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, and while I got Jeff on the line, I wanted to thank him while we're all together here. When we met you that day, Merle, actually, while we were waiting for you, you know, I was with my vice president, Joe Giacoletti.
Mm-hmm.
And the society is putting together a Columbus Day gala and silent auction in October. And I was explaining this to Jeff, and he suggested that I might go talk to Amy, who manages the Euphoria Euphoria restaurant and the Sensation Cafe, from which the gondolas have an arrangement with. Isn't that right, Jeff?
Yeah, Amy's the owner of Cafe and Euphoria. Mm-hmm.
And so while we waited for you, Merle, I decided to make use of my time, and I went into the restaurant, and I spoke to Amy, a very delightful young woman, and she agreed to give us a package for our silent auction, which consisted for a dinner of four at Euphoria, and I believe it was an hour gondola ride as well. So it's a package that nears almost $500. So I want to thank you, Jeff, for directing me in that.
I'm so happy to do it, because we're really happy that you've got so much going on downtown, and now with the new JW Marriott, we're happy that the Italian events are going on downtown. And, you know, you mentioned the different things that your group does. And what I love that we're all able to do daily is celebrate Italian Heritage daily. I think it's mm-hmm. you know great. You know, we
quite agree.
We're here, and it's nice for people to experience different aspects of culture. And I think it's interesting because a lot of people are getting more exposure to this downtown because many people are not taking vacations; they're doing staycations where they, you know, check out the culture that's in their own town. And I think that's a great thing.
Yeah. And by the way, I think I might have mentioned my boss Jim Lisa is part of a group. This whole group that's dealing with not stereotyping Italians.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know. Yeah.
That's an excellent point because you know all too often we see that happen over and over again. Whether it's the advertisements that we see, you know, different kind of campaigns that they put on, whether it's in the movies, whether it's in television shows. And I think more times than not, although there's various groups that fall victim to this, for some reason there is such a focus on Italian Americans being into those obvious stereotypes that we all know what we're talking about. I don't even have to mention what comes
right
to mind. We know what we're saying here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's terrible because with all the wonderful contributions that Italians have made on both shores, when you talk about things of that nature, that'll be if you say what group comes to mind that's involved in certain nefarious type of organization or activities, and you know what group comes up, and that's because
right
of that continual focus on that stereotyping nonsense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's. I'll get in. I'll hook you up with the name of this group or something, so it might be interesting for you to find out
thank
about
you
this.
Yeah.
Because I know the papers, the newspaper goes to Florida, New York, Boston, and Italy, the newspaper. So I'm going to ask him if are you interested in getting you want me to get the paper sent out to you?
Yeah, I'd appreciate that very much.
Okay, I'm going to ask him to do that, to send out some copies, although you can read it online, but this way you can have it also in print. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, and it's not, you know, not to be prejudicial, but I want to ask you about some restaurants there. If someone wants to get authentic Italian food, not Sicilian, I'm sorry. And I have to say not Sicilian, it gave me agita, I'm sorry. But the non-Sicilian restaurants, where does one go?
Well, I think one of the places that I could suggest, you know, would be Southern Italian, but I think it incorporates some of the more central and northern recipes as well. And that's the Capri Ristorante, which is on Keystone Avenue, close to 71st Street. It's run by Arturo Doroso, who is from the Amalfi Coast, actually, in that area. And while there are things that are on the menu that are quite clearly Neapolitan, or if we say in the dialect, Napolitan, you'll also find that there's many other dishes that he's incorporated from different parts of Italy as well. So it's not necessarily the stereotypical food that you would expect. And I think that's very refreshing. And, of course, you've eaten at Iria's. Now, Iria's is more typically Southern Italian, and it's a restaurant that goes back about 100 years, and it's a landmark, and it's an excellent restaurant.
Right.
We have another new one that's only been out for a year.
Uh-huh.
In fact, Iozzo's Garden of Italy, Freddy Ozzo opened the first Italian restaurant in Indiana 75 years ago. And his great-granddaughter has reopened it under his name. And it's close to downtown, South Meridian. But they try very hard to incorporate different regions of Italy, of Italian cuisine, and with their wine list as well.
One thing I've got to mention, Carol, and Katie, of course, which is, I believe, your cousin, isn't she?
Well, we're cousins We were nearly cousins. My grandmother almost married into their family, and poor Salvatore died before they could get married. So they count me as a cousin, but not technically.
Well, this is kind of news breaking. Nobody knows that I'm announcing it for this first time, but for this year's Columbus Day Gala recognition for Italian Business of the Year, it's going to be Katie Azzozzo Cummings/Harris. So,
excellent.
Yeah, we thought that she demonstrated that entrepreneurial spirit of an Italian American that was just exemplary.
Yeah, excellent.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I got really really spoiled when I recently went to Boston. I went to this this restaurant and the chef came out and he did a tasting, and I'm just eating food. I like oh my god, you know, it's like wow. And and I said, basically, it was like you would be sitting in Italy and having the food. So he was having like the razor clams, you know, things like that. And I remember when that came out, that when I was in Italy, like all of a sudden out came razor clams. Everybody on the press trip, nobody wanted to taste them. And, you know, it's like, yeah, I'll taste them. And I'm like, oh, it's razor clams. Yeah, I know what razor clams are. And the funny thing is it's not even an Italian thing. It's typical of you going to a Chinese restaurant, and when they're in season, they have the razor clam.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But he was making, it was like, it was just unbelievable. And oh yeah, boar, wild boar, which
Chingali.
I didn't realize was something that was like a typical, like an Italian thing that you would have in Italy. So it was interesting to be in a restaurant, you know, and have that kind of food, you know. In other words, everything wasn't tomato sauce. It's like, that's what I learned. You make a good tomato sauce, fry something up, and it's Italian. But I stopped. That's why I stopped cooking Italian food, because the tomato sauce is what gave me agita.
Agita.
Even with the pork bones in it, pork neck bones. You know.
Well, Mel, next time you come to Indianapolis, you let us know, and we'll take you to a few places that you'll enjoy, and we promise you won't get out of it.
Well,
hey, Ralph, maybe we'll cook for her.
Maybe we will.
Oh, yeah. That would
That's
be
even better.
And by the way, my connection actually with Columbus Day is I went to Christopher Columbus High School, and because of that, we were the first high school in the parade, and I marched in the band playing the oboe.
Very good.
So that was my connection at all. Anyway, so I want to go. I want to go into this thing with the gondola, because I'm interested. It's like, you know, somebody suddenly decides to put a gondola on the canal. Not every place. You can't find that everywhere.
That's true. That's very true. The gondola is moored at the north end of the canal. The canal is about a mile and a half long, so it's about a 3-mile jog around the outside perimeter. But we are at the north end of the canal, which is the newest part of the canal, and that's at 337 West 11th Street. And you can look at footage and see our current commercial for the gondolas and everything on 4gondola.com, just the number 4, GONDOLA.com. And you can hear samples of vocals and see the boats and see everything in action. And, yeah, this is our 8th season in Indianapolis with the gondola ride. It's really one of Indianapolis's best-kept secrets. It's
not
the
number anymore.
That's right.
You're right. You've told the world. We are the number one proposal destination now in the state of Indiana. We average over one proposal a day. And on weekends you can see several proposals, and each one of them is very unique and very different. Some people have little electric boats that come out, you know, carrying a message, and some of them have floating bottles in the water that the gondola goes by and they pull out of the water. Sometimes they'll go under a bridge and their friends will all be holding a sign, you know, marry me. It's really fun, and we encourage all of our guests to be creative, and you know, you only do this once. Do it do it some way that showcases your style and your personality. And so we do, when we know that they're going to get on the gondola to propose, we do a little bit of coaching in that we don't want them to propose right before they get on or in the first 2 minutes of being on board the gondola. We usually want them to allow the mood to let the mood set first, and then maybe propose after the boat's turned around and headed back. Back in, but it's really a peaceful and beautiful place, the Indianapolis Canal. It's very quiet and much different from when we were operating on Lower Wacker Drive in Chicago. The Chicago was, heavy traffic, very heavy boat traffic. And, most of the days that people travel on gondolas in Indianapolis, certainly in Chicago, we couldn't even go out because it was just too heavy traffic. You know, 4th of July in Chicago, everybody's out. Venetian night, everybody's out. And the waves are really, really crazy in Chicago. But I did love being there in Chicago. It was a lot of fun, but certainly a lot more dangerous than it is here in Indianapolis.
Well, it sounds like you have a great job.
I love my job because my job is part of joy. You know, I get to be in the moment and in joy at all times. You know, when guests come to us, they call us about an event that's going to bring everybody great joy, and then we get to be a part of that joy. So it's really, really, it's such a privilege and an honor to be every single night involved in people's happiness. And keeping happiness alive and keeping happiness flowing in the world is so essential. And many times after we have a lot of repeat customers, and when people come back that second time, they say, you know, that was the best sleep I ever had after I rode the gondola. And I was like, yeah, because you've got to feed your soul. Everybody's soul needs a little feeding. We have this world today that's just manic and crazy and busy and, you know, push, 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 work, work, work. And the truth is we all need to experience relaxation and joy. And, this is one of the ways we can do that. We can look at what people did in history and over time to experience joy and peace. And it's certainly a beautiful way to travel. And, we hope to keep gondolas alive for years to come. It certainly has diminished in the last 20 years drastically. The number of people making a living operating boats is just a fraction of what it was even 20 years ago. So we hope this, this part of the culture and heritage stays alive, and we believe that it's really important, to feed your soul and have a really peaceful and beautiful time.
Tell me about the boat itself.
The boats were built in 1999, and the original gondolas that were in Chicago were there in 1893. There was not gondola service during the 1900s, and I really felt it was important to try to pique people's interest in gondola rides. Because I just think they're one of the treasures of the world, one of the most beautiful things in the world. And so we brought gondola service to Chicago in the year 2000, and we stayed there for 3 years, and then in 2004 we brought the gondolas to Indianapolis. And it's really a much more peaceful ride, and it's really more like a ride in Venice in Indianapolis
You were commenting something about because of something about what it's made of, and why it's black or something.
Right. Well, gondolas have been used, of course, for travel for the last 1,000 years. And, a couple hundred years ago, you might have seen gondolas of any color, many of them covered with precious stones and precious metals. And the Doge didn't like this, you know, display of wealth on the boats. And, you know, now by law, you can't have silver or gold ornamentation on gondolas. You can only have iron or brass, and all the gondolas have to be black. There is an exemption for that, and that's for very, very special weddings, but it's all in advance, writing in advance, and getting approval for that is pretty difficult. One thing that we think is really great is that having boats that are so big here in the States, it's really nice to have, you know, a gondola that can seat, you know, a whole wedding party and have a minister on board. Many people use the canal as the aisle of the wedding, and they'll have, you know, one family on one side and one family on the other side of the canal, and then the family will cross the Ivy Bridge. A lot of families do a wedding in the central canal where there's a little Ivy wedding bridge there and beautiful fountains. So, and then some people use the gondolas to arrive at their wedding. Some people use them to depart from the wedding, or they'll use them to arrive if they're having their party. They'll arrive at their party or depart from their party on a gondola. So it really is part of the beautification of Indianapolis, certainly, and bringing something, you know, really beautiful and elegant to the canal. And, you know, at $30 a person, many people say, well, wow, that's a lot of money. But that's for a half an hour ride, and that's on our public passenger boat. But certainly, if you were going to ride in Venice today and have your operator, you know, serenade you the whole time, certainly that would be upwards of $100. It's a real nice experience. You can bring your own wine, champagne, or food, or you can have either of our restaurants cater a basket for you. So, you know, when the two of you are going to cook that night, maybe you should just cook for her and then bring
and
the food
we'll
on the gondola.
And then we'll all eat on the boat. And then let's meet on the gondola.
You can eat on the gondola.
I love it.
Do you only have one gondola or you have more?
No, we have two gondolas. We have two gondolas, and they're the largest in history to come to America. And we did have three gondolas, but we really don't have the need for three gondolas. And we sold our other boat actually at a profit. Gondolas tend to increase in value, you know, as long as they're well maintained.
So the one that I was on is the second one look the same, the same size?
Yes. The one that you were on was La Chinia Niera, the Black Swan, and we have La Bella Niera, the Black Beauty, as well.
The Black
and
Swan, isn't
that
a movie?
That actually was a movie.
Yeah.
But it was a movie after we named our boat.
Oh, okay. They stole it. Okay.
So we also have a new architectural tour boat coming out at the very end of the month. It's private. It seats two, and you have a docent on board that'll give you the history and culture of the city. They do not sing on that boat. It's called La Dolce Vita, The Sweet Life. And it's a full canal tour. The gondolas do not go the whole canal in a half an hour. It would take probably 2 hours to row the whole canal on a gondola. But the new architectural tour will do the whole canal. And then it's a small little electric boat, but it's very private, and you'll have a docent on board giving you history and telling you about the city, and you can bring wine, champagne, or food on that boat as well.
Wow, that's interesting. That just so I get a sense of location. I did a Segway tour, and I saw the canal over there. Is that the end of the canal?
The canal ends. The canal ends down there at the Indiana State Museum, and also the NCAA building. You know, and the canal actually goes by waterfall. Right into White River there,
does the gondola go that far though?
The gondola can go there. But mostly we operate from 11th Street, you know, for our regular tours. And like the public passenger boat leaves at 2 o'clock and 6 o'clock every day from 11th Street. But, for example, we're doing a big event at the Indiana State Museum, and they've rented the boats for a couple of hours. So all the boats will be there at the Indiana State Museum, you know, for their event and operate from that location. So they can operate for special events from anywhere.
Okay. Now, I was just kind of wondering if, like, somebody can, like, go on a Segway tour and then hop a boat right after, but I guess not.
Oh, yeah, probably not, because the Segways start and end at the south end of the canal.
We moved
to the north end of the canal because of how quiet
right.
it is up there. And even though people said, well, hey, that's not as heavy traffic of an area, you know, it won't be as good for your business. Ultimately, that way people get a much more private ride, and it's really it has a beautiful view of the city from up there. And it is a real private ride. That way you you know, you don't have a ton of interaction with you know, like the paddle boats are at the other end, so we don't have as much paddle boat interaction that way.
Okay, so in other words, I would find on the canal normally other boats then? I mean, at this time I didn't see any boats.
There are paddle boats at the Ohio Street Basin, yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize anything else was like operating on there.
Yeah, there are paddle boats there. Mm-hmm.
Do we want to hear another song? Can we make him sing another song?
I would love to hear another song, and then I'm going to have to.
And then I know you have to leave. Okay,
I do.
One more song for Carol before she starts.
Okay, how about come to the sea?
Okay.
Vedi questa fanciulla la luna, spande un raggio si chiaro sul mare. Vieni me co t'aspetta la bruna, fida barca del tuo marna. Ma tu dormi non pensi al tuo figlio, ma non dormi chi vive domo. Io la notte a te volo solido. Era il giorno a te volo colco, vieni sul mare, vieni a vogar, sentirai l'ebbrezza del tuo marna, del tuo marna, vieni sul mare. Vieni a vogare, sentirai l'ebbrezza del tuo mare.
Okay. Now you can
Bravissimo.
Very well done.
Now you can.
Well, thank you so much, Merle, for the opportunity.
You're very welcome.
I enjoyed being with all of you this evening. Buonasera.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ciao,
buonasera. It was a pleasure.
And Merle the World, good luck. Buona fortuna. E tante grazie.
Yes, and thank you for sharing your story with us.
It was wonderful. Thanks so much.
Buonasera. Have a great evening.
You too. Bye.
Goodbye. Okay. So are you leaving us too, Ralph?
If you'd like to chat a little bit more, I'm at your disposal.
Let's chat a little bit more, because I want to kind of get into you know, any of the other things. I wanted, I'm up for, you know, like connections and stuff like that. And I think I don't know, we could probably figure out some more things to involve between the gondola and the society, don't we?
Sure.
You know, I
Absolutely.
Mean. Yeah. So getting back to the I wanted to ask one other question regarding the gondola.
Sure.
Aside from people from proposals, like what are the things, any other events that people have done, like you know, on the gondola?
Well,
other than
definitely the we do. Proposals and weddings are the mainstay of our business, But I would say, aside from that, we are a huge place to celebrate your birthday or have an anniversary. Those are the next two main things that people do. Aside from those, we have had bachelorette parties on board, which was actually really fun. And we've had even children's groups come learn about boats and come take a day where they learn, you know, where they're doing a career day and they learn about different people's jobs and different people's careers. We've, you know, had plenty of students come down and ride the gondola. And in addition to that, we've had a lot of grandparent tours where a grandparent brings a grandchild on a tour bus and they come in from another state somewhere and they'll ride the gondola, you know, with one of their grandchildren. And that's really a fun experience because, you know, many times, you know, they have not been on a gondola. So it's really a lot of fun.
Do you explain beforehand, like, no cell phones and whatever, and I'm going to sing, so, you know, and letting people know that they can...
It's funny because, yeah, on a lot of our rides, we do tell people, please don't talk on their futuristic science fiction little machines. And then they're like, what is he talking about? But, yeah, because it's, you know, especially if you're on a public passenger ride and you're talking on your cell phone and doing business on your cell phone for that whole 30 minutes, it's really rude for our other customers, you know, so.
Well, I think you're squandering your time on a beautiful experience and you're
right.
Just missing out on a wonderful thing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And albeit some people think they're doing, you know, us a favor by, you know, putting somebody on the phone and then having us sing to them, it's just much better if they come and ride, you know, and check out the experience for themselves.
Sure,
because certainly they won't find that much relaxation, you know, hearing a phone call over the, you know, from the gondola. But yeah, it is interesting that some people today are just so addicted to their technology that they just can't let it go even for 30 minutes. You know, they might miss that call.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the two that I've been on prior have been settings where you're talking about, like, what's in the area. Like, one was, like, oh, the millionaire homes, you know, and stuff like that kind of stuff, as opposed to just riding. So it was more of, like, the gondolier was, you know, giving you a little tour of
right,
where you are.
Right, and we try to stay away from that. We really try to stay away from that. We try to take people to a place, a fantasy place, somewhere. We just try to transport them, you know, a little bit back in time, but we try to give them a moment of suspended belief and just allow their own mind to set the stage for a peaceful, relaxing moment, because I think that's so missing today. We as I said before, we're just so full of schedule, you know, the schedule is just so full today, and I think it's really important for people to take a moment, you know, just breathe and just relax. So, you know, if they want explanations of buildings and things like that, that's why we're going to offer the architectural tour and
right,
a history tour of the canal, so that if they want that, they certainly can get that. And I think that will grow over time. I don't think that this summer it's all of a sudden going to be, you know, a huge, you know, infiltration for the architectural tour, but I do believe over time it will definitely be, you know, it'll definitely grow. But as far as in regards to the gondola, we just want them to, you know, experience some music and a little bit of history of the boats, and also to experience a peaceful moment. And there doesn't have to be something said every second. You know, it's not
right.
It's not the thing where, you know, every second of the ride, you have to be full of, you know, something being said. So
right, this is on the right, this is on the left.
Yeah, yeah. So that gives us the opportunity to really showcase the boat itself and showcase the music industry.
Yeah, well, I'd probably write something like, if you're looking for a tour, go on a Segway. If you're looking for a gondola ride, this is the thing to take.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so people really get clear. Ralph, have you ever been on the gondola?
Oh yes, I have. Not just here. I've been on the Genuine Article. Not that his is not, but I'm talking about in Venezia. So I've actually ridden on the canals of Venice.
Oh, okay. That's really great. So Ralph, what else? Have we missed anything about the society or about the area?
Well, I mean, I think, again, you know, the focus is on doing anything and everything that we can to celebrate the culture itself. And it manifests itself in different ways. The activities such as what I told you. In addition to that, we're proud of another little tradition that we've gotten going here. Across from Holy Rosary that Carol spoke of earlier, that's the Italian parish that was started 100 years ago here in the city. There was a city park, and in that city park, there was a potential for doing something very special for it. So we contacted the city, and we made a deal with them. We said, if you allow the society to build bocce ball courts, and really the proper pronunciation is bocce, because bocce really means kiss, but bocce courts, we'll do it at our expense, we'll maintain them, and you'll give us an opportunity to express our ethnicity, being that this is a traditional neighborhood from where it sprung. Or from, you know, where it resides. And so the city agreed to do that. So we started out with a single court. We now have four courts. It's just not members of our society that's involved in these bocce ball leagues, but we have the entire neighborhood, whether they're Italian or not, that's involved. We play spring, summer, and fall. And now in the winter, we transfer that to a building which is about 2 to 3 blocks away and do a winter league as well. So we're playing every day of the week, and of course, at the end of the summer, we have a tournament. And so that has been growing in its notoriety and has become known statewide, and we've even gotten a little national recognition for it as well.
Do you find women participating?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And they're every bit as competitive.
I always think of it as like a men's thing, you know?
Well, I think traditionally, I think, yes, you'd be correct in making that conclusion. But that has since changed. And so you find many women that are involved in it. And, of course, what makes it such a great activity is not just throwing the larger ball, you know, to see how close you can get to the polina, but it's what happens in between time, the interaction between individuals. Everybody usually brings a little something to share, whether it's a little bit of food, it's a little bit of drink, it's good conversation, it's just interacting on a very relaxed social basis, and it becomes a wonderful experience. So
so
bocce itself is great because it's part of the culture itself, but it's what it fosters. It's what it leads into in that social interaction, which is so important.
It's like Jewish women playing mahjong.
Very similar.
Which I have never understood how that came about. It's since it's a Chinese game.
That's America, isn't it? That's America.
Yeah, it's America. But the only thing I caught was that the women would play mahjong and the men would play poker. That's all I got. And each one, and I guess maybe the husbands didn't really know the wives were betting.
That could be.
It's a betting game.
That could be.
It's really funny. I had gone to some event, and they were it was so fun, and it was about having to do with the Jewish women, and I was in this place, and they said they were talking about in terms of heritage, and the woman says we need to pass it down for Jewish women to play mahjong,
uh-huh.
And I looked at her like, why? You know, you know, and she says it's bad. It's not, you know, everybody doesn't know how, they don't know how to play Mahjong. And I look, now, my mother made me play when I was 5 years old because they needed another person. So that's why I learned to play Mahjong. And I looked at them, I said, well, fine, I'll tell you what, I'll teach everybody how to play Mahjong. Well, my God, signs went off all over this place. The Mahjong was, and I thought, this is really hysterical. This is so absurd, but I have a sense of humor. So I said, okay, fine. So I got to the thing now. Across the way was some Asian women, Asian American women, and they popped in to see us, you know, my teaching how to play Mahjong, which I thought was hysterical because I'm sure they knew how to play it better than we did. So I got to the point, you know, after teaching, you know, going around
right.
and saying, and one woman turns to me and says, well, that's so easy, but how come the game takes so long? So I said, oh, because in between you have the woman going, oy, my back is killing me. Let me tell you what my husband, he was doing the other day. I went to the store there, and I think, I'm not sure of that. I got this pain here. Well, nobody laughed. I thought to myself, don't you people have a sense of humor? So I'm sure when you're playing bocce, it's kind of like that. You have your stories
that's right.
Go on.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Kind of thing. It's the games that you take from another country, you know, although I don't know what, I still don't know why, you know, how that came about. I was saying from another country. Now, you're certainly not taking it from Russia if you came here from Russia.
Right.
You know,
but no, but you're quite right. That's part of it. It's just not the game itself, but it's what that game leads to, and that's that wonderful social interaction with people that you can
enjoy.
Yeah, that's
you know, that's what counts. Now you can't even do that because now you're just, you know, standing. What is it? The thing on in front of the TV.
Oh yeah. I know.
I ain't gonna do. I can't do that. I'm lucky. And everybody, it's so funny because everybody says, are you on Facebook? Do you have Twitter? I said, please. I got 3 blogs. I got this radio show, and et cetera, et cetera. I said, I can't tweet and twit and whatever. Also, I have enough. It's enough. Please, you know. An email address. Good enough.
Oh, I know. But, you know, it gets to the point now. And you know, what Jeff was talking about, you know, when it's like, they try to put you in that place while in the gondola, you know, outside of the busy world of technology and how we communicate with each other. And, you know, that really is a refreshing break. I mean, in my line of work, I'm a criminal defense attorney. And it gets to the point now where when there are different aspects of cases coming up, we're just not talking about just letters or phone calls anymore, but we're talking about getting contacted by prosecutors by way of text messages. Did you see my last offer that I had just sent you on such and such a case and all of that? I mean, the accessibility issue has gotten to such a degree that you're always on 24 hours, always. So getting on the Jeff's gondola where he says, please don't use that thing, is great. It's a breath of fresh air.
Yes, relax, just chill out, relax. I know. I'm
happy you feel the same way.
Yeah, I wish we had gondolas here in New York. We don't have any kind of canal, though, to use it. I did go on one gondola that was, you know, motorized. It sort of lost its flavor, though.
The charm factor isn't.
Kind of loses. The guy is standing there. He's not rowing. He's just, you know, steering.
That's right.
They have some out at Lake Las Vegas. Lake Las Vegas, I'm not sure if it's even open anymore because I think it went bankrupt. Maybe it's reopening this year, but they had some gondolas out there, and so we drove out to see them. But they had steering wheels on the back, so I was like, "Oh, that's not really the same thing."
Yeah.
That's right. Everybody's trying to make the better mousetrap, though, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is the with the ore and the, you know, then that's what makes it, you know, and
right.
And no motor. It's just the, you know,
right.
The, just hearing flowing kind of noise.
It has been a joy talking to both of you. I
yes.
need to run because we've got boats going out.
Okay.
Jeff, you take care. We'll see you in the very near future.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah.
Please stay in touch, and I look forward to what we can do together. And it was really a pleasure meeting both of you in person as well as spending time with you today.
Take
great.
Care.
And have a great evening.
You too. Bye,
Sarah. Jeff.
Meryl, I want to thank you for the opportunity to allow you to
come sure.
And talk about Indianapolis and the Italian-American community. You know, it may sound like it's old hat, but it's really not because – you know, as we advance on in years, I think keeping some of those traditions alive and knowing who you are and where you come from is so important, not just to us as Italian Americans, but every group. And so I encourage everybody, no matter what their ethnicity, heritage, background is, to find out who you are, find out what you are, and celebrate it. Because it's through that diversity that we all share a certain commonality and that we can share experiences that just make us a stronger community.
Okay. Well, I'll try. I still have no connection with Russia and Germany, but that's
well,
okay.
Hey. But again,
okay.
I wanna, thanks
I
so
mind.
Much. And
you're very welcome.
And if you get out here again, you be sure that you call us, and we'll get
oh,
you
I
to that restaurant
will.
We spoke of, and maybe we can be persuaded to cook for you as well.
Oh yeah, that's fine with me.
All right.
Have a great evening. Thank
you,
you so
care.
Much, Ralph.
Bye bye.
Bye. Okay, well, I'm going to take one little quick break here for commercial, and then we're going to going to a spa. Okay, here we go.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra leg room.
Uh-huh. We have extra leg room as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay, if I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No, that is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of leg room.
Ah.
I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but it has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue. Based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
I love that commercial. It's so cute. I need to write a commercial on AirTran. I keep asking them for a commercial because I love going AirTran. And that's actually how I went back and forth to Indianapolis. I'll talk about AirTran in a little while, but first we want to get to chilling out. I mean, we chilled out already on the gondola. Now let's chill out at the spa. And I got Kevin there. Kevin, you're on the line, yeah?
Good afternoon, Merle.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. It's great to be on the air with you.
The first thing I want to get into is when you were talking to me about the building itself, the where you are, I don't know about the whole building, but where you have the spa, and I wanted you to tell us about this because this is a part of history of Indianapolis.
Absolutely. My spa is called Studio 2000 Salon and Day Spa, and we're located in the Circle Tower building. And the Circle Tower building is on Monument Circle, which is our center of downtown. It's the center of everything in Indianapolis. Everything radiates from that. Actually designed very similar to Washington, D.C., with the roundabout or circular street in the middle and everything angles off of it. And the Circle Tower was built, started in 1927 and completed in 1929, and it's the only remaining true Art Deco building in downtown Indianapolis. It's pyramid-topped. It has a wonderful combination of both Egyptian and Aztec influence, as does most Art Deco buildings. And it's relatively untouched in terms of the amenities that were built into it, such as the black marble lobby with all kinds of wonderful men as machines and animals and all kinds of wonderful things that decorate and ornate the lobby. And then, of course, our spa facility on the second floor is based around a 1929 barbershop, which is an original Art Deco interior that was designed with the building and has a real, shall I say, Al Capone feel to it, because it looks like something out of The Untouchables. When you walk in, as you probably experienced, it's a wonderful black tile with inlay silver figurines and ziggurats and wavy lines, and it's really a terrific step back into time. And we were very fortunate to find it back in 1989 when the second owner decided to retire after 40 years.
Well, that answered the question of how long ago did you, how long have you been there? Have you been there since then, or have you owned this since 89?
We have owned it since 1989. The history of the barbershop, it originally was called the Circle Tower Barbershop. It opened with the building, as I said, in 1929. We don't know the name of the first owner. He was there from 1929 to 1949. And in 1949, a gentleman by the name of George Dixon took it over. George barbered and was a fixture in the community up until he retired in his early 80s in 1989. So he was there for 40 years. We were fortunate enough to stumble onto it. We were actually looking at retail space on the first floor to open our new salon, and the building manager said, well, we have this barbershop, he just retired, you should see this. And I walked in, and I was dumbstruck by it. It was like walking back into time. And I looked at her and said, go ahead and draw up the lease today, we'll take it. So it was, we were off to the races after that. It underwent a complete mechanical remodel and kept all of the original Art Deco design to it. And if you visit our website, it's documented fairly well in pictures on our website. Our website is studio2000spa.com, and you can take a tour through the pictures of the salon and the spa. And that's where we really started. We started out with two hairstylists in 1989, and now we're up to I think we have 28 employees now.
Oh,
and
cool.
we're open 7 days a week. So we're now a complete spa and salon, where when we first started, our core business was the salon business. We added the spa about 10 years later.
So now describe to my audience like the different areas of the
sure.
spa that you have.
Sure. We offer a full menu of treatments, as you would expect in any major spa. We have a full menu of massage, from relaxation massage to aromatherapy massage, hot stone massage, deep tissue. We do prenatal or maternity massage. And we also have a number of other interesting things we can do, such as reflexology, which is a massage strictly of the feet. It's great for people who are on their feet quite a bit, like hairstylists or servers or floor traders. If you stand constantly, this reflexology is a perfect massage for you. We also offer a full menu of skin care. We do facials. We do all kinds of waxing. We do all kinds of acne treatments. We do chemical peels. And then we also do full body treatments, such as body wraps and scrubs. And we also do manicure pedicures. So we have treatments for your hands and feet. And one of the wonderful things about our facility is that we can combine a number of things into a package, and you can spend the entire day with us. We have an eight-hour package called the Decadent Diva, and it basically starts at 9 in the morning, and you should leave right around 6 in the evening, and you've been fed lunch, and you've been pampered from head to toe.
Wow.
We have to roll you out in a gurney.
Well, it's almost like, you know, if you're at a resort where you get to spend, you know, a lot of time. I wish I had the 8 hours to do that. That would have been interesting. But we only gave me like two or three. You know?
Yeah,
And I want you to describe I want to talk about that particular signature 3-hour package.
Sure. The Cleopatra is the experience that you had, and when we call them experiences or journeys, because generally when people leave, they have this look on their face like, "Wow, that was really great." And the Cleopatra is one of our very first packages we designed in the spa business, and it's been extremely popular because not everyone can spend a whole day at the spa, but a half a day, 3 to 4 hours, depending on what all you do in the package. It's a great way to relax and kind of renew your senses and really feel good about what you've done for yourself. It makes a wonderful gift. People have used it for anniversaries, birthdays, all types of holiday gifts. And a lot of our corporate clients will give this to their employees for a reward, for a job well done. The Cleopatra, it starts out, or it includes a full body exfoliation. We have a complete wet room, and a wet room is generally, it's a large shower-style room. It's all tile and has a floor drain in it, and we have a wet table that you lay on, and they scrub your body with a choice of a couple of different things. Most likely they used a deep sea salt or dead sea salt on you to scrub all of your dermis layer so that you have a nice glow to you. That's why some people call it a salt glow. Mm. And then I believe the next step is a tranquility, a redefined nourishing body wrap. And Redefine Nourish is a product manufactured by the Davinus company in northern Italy. We had a little bit of an Italian theme earlier in the show. Yeah, we're back to Italy. It's It is manufactured by a family-run company called Davinus, and they are in northern Italy in Parma, Italy. And they are our main supplier of skincare products and hair care products. Very meticulous design and production of these products, and just a wonderful product line when it comes to the activity. It's a very active product. On the salon side of things, their color line and their take-home products are unmatched. The color, especially on the hair, is extremely shiny, extremely long-lasting, and that's very important when you're someone who highlights or colors your hair. But back to the spa, it's a very wonderful, moisturizing and antioxidant style of wrap where it really gives you a lot of nourishment to your skin layer, and hopefully that nourishment is absorbed through the skin into the body. But it has a number of vitamins and botanical extracts, and it just really envelops you in an antioxidant experience, and it really does a wonderful job of making you feel good. As a part of that package, you receive an antioxidant mask, and there's a lip blooming treatment, and the lip blooming treatment is one that somewhat scrubs and revitalizes your lips and gives it a bit of a pouty plump to them to really give them a kind of a new lease on life. A lot of people, other than putting lipstick on your lips, they don't scrub or they don't treat their lips to any type of product that helps redefine them or reinvigorate them. And we found that their lip blooming treatment is a really wonderful way to do that. In the process, the antioxidant mask, again, like the nourishing product, really rebalances your skin and helps hydrate your face. And this is all done, and I think you experience this while you're in a body wrap, in the Redefined Nourish body wrap. Mm-hmm. And they massage your face and they massage your feet, and they generally take a nice, tranquil time with you. And then they also, in the process, when you're unwrapped, you're washed off in what's called a Vichy shower. A Vichy shower is also known as a rain bar, where it swings out over the wet table that you're you're relaxing on, and there's five shower heads on it that drizzle a warm rain style of rinse on you. And a lot of people have described it to me as being caught in a wonderful warm rain shower.
Yeah.
Maybe a tropical, tropical forest type thing, rainforest type thing. And then to top it off, there's a moisturizing massage with a Comfort Zone, which is the Davinus brand of skincare products, massage at the end. And when you're all relaxed and out of the wet room and back in your street clothes, we shampoo and massage your scalp and fix your hair so you go out looking and feeling like $1 million.
Wow.
But not for $1 million. It's considerably
right.
less.
Yeah. And when I say when you say feeling like $1 million, it doesn't mean all green and wrinkled either.
That's correct.
Yeah, what's funny is that when I go to the hair salon, and I really understand, it's like the person wants to do so much. Can I put this in here? Can I do this? And it's like, no. So I it's just, for me, I have wash and wear hair.
Yeah.
It's like I wash my hair. I put my fingers through my hair to shape it into place, fluff it up, and leave.
Sure.
And that's, you know, so it's kind of like, you know, like, okay, I'll let her blow dry it.
Right. Well, you know, I will tell you that our hairstylists, our designers, are some of the most highly educated people in the hair care industry. We have a continual program of education for them, and they all serve an apprenticeship before they're on the floor. And one of the things that they do is they view themselves as a consultant, very similar to a doctor, who they will look at and evaluate your hair and make recommendations like a dermatologist would, or a plastic surgeon or a orthopedic surgeon, on how to improve what you have.
Sure.
And a lot of times they will do things, even small things, that some of my male friends will tell me, man, I can't believe that she did this to my hair. It looks so much better. It feels so much better.
Oh,
I can't live without her. I've got to come back every 4 weeks. So, which is a wonderful thing for our artist.
Yeah, it is.
And
I was tempted to say, okay, let's try, like, throw it into a different style using gels. And then I thought to myself, but then I'm going to go home and I'm not going to be able to do it myself. So the heck with it, just, you know. Because, like, you know,
sure.
Sometimes it's like I can watch, you know, somebody on TV and I'll look and I say, I wonder what I would look like with that, with the hair, like, just coming out and things like that with the gels.
Yeah.
You know, and then I think to myself, it probably looks good on that person and it'll look like crap on me.
You'd be surprised. I mean, I always tell new clients, and especially brides who are coming in for that most important day for their formal updo or their bridal, I say to them, and for brides especially, we always do a practice ahead of time, so we know exactly what the game plan is going to be on that day. I always tell them our designers are very visual people. They're artists. They're sculptors. And if you can bring a photo or a picture from a magazine on what you would like to look like or what your ideas are, that way they can dream with you and they can create a look that really gets you where you want to go. And you know, honest to God, Merle, you know, a wedding is the most important day in a woman's life, and it has to be perfect in terms of the hair and the makeup, because those photos are there forever. And we take great pride in our work, and we take a lot of care with our brides to make sure they look fantastic.
Well, I'm just thinking about, now that I had the other guys on the radio, I was just thinking about this could tie in, because you have Italian products. We could tie this into an added package.
Sure.
Of, you know, going in the gondola and then going to the spa.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, there's a lot of interesting things to do in downtown Indianapolis, and, you know, the gondola rides are wonderful. It's been a wonderful addition to downtown. And, you know, the canal is a short walk from all of the hotels and our spa. We're all within just a few blocks of each other. And Studio 2000 Salon and Day Spa is in the center of downtown, and we're literally surrounded by 25 hotels within a few blocks. And I think that most of the hotel concierge know about us, and they refer a lot of business to us, which we greatly appreciate. And one of the things I always tell the customers when they leave us is just make sure that you tell the concierge and the front desk people about your experience here. And that's what keeps them coming back, because they know that we will take great care of their guests, and we will make the front desk staff or whoever referred them to us look really good.
Well, I have to tell you, one of the things that was funny was that when I got the information, and it's like somebody, oh, it's just right around the corner from the your hotel. I'm
right.
Going, no, it's not. It's not. We got to take the car. I can't walk that far.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, it's interesting. It's like, now if I was in Manhattan, I would probably kind of say the same thing. You know, oh, it's right there in the neighborhood there. Because, like, you know, I have the sense of, like, walking around Manhattan, and, like, ten blocks is nothing.
Right.
You know, when you're walking in Manhattan. So when you're going, oh, yeah, it's right around the corner. Well, yeah, it's sort of.
Yeah. And if you walk ten blocks in downtown Indianapolis, you're out of downtown by then. So.
Yeah, right.
you're in Broad Ripple, so.
Yeah, it's definitely a great location. I took some shots of the circle there, which is under construction. But at least I got it. Well, and the whole city is under construction because of
the Super Bowl.
Yeah, aren't you
lucky?
And
probably like Manhattan or any large city, there's constant upgrades and you know, improvements going on. We have a wonderful bricked downtown, our circle, some people would call it a town square, ours happens to be round, it's a circle. It's all brick, it's all landscaped in the summer. We have wonderful fountains flowing, water, and of course during the wintertime it's the world's largest Christmas tree. It's decorated like a Christmas tree, and there's a huge Christmas tree lighting right outside of our windows of Studio 2000. And it brings down 100,000 people just for the flick of the switch to turn on the lights. So it's a great gathering place for our community. And in just a few weeks, when the Indy 500 comes to town, there'll be the 500 Festival Parade, which is a huge parade with all the drivers and lots of celebrities, and similar to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, but it's all centered around racing. And it attracts about 125,000 people downtown, which is a lot for our city, and it's really a great place to be in the middle of. Downtown is always very vibrant, and there's always something going on.
Yeah, I that's what I gather. I'll tell you, I wasn't sure how much I was, in terms of attractions, but wow, or Melody and Leroy knew more of the attractions, so we were going to the Children's Museum, and then there was this thing, the Rhythm Discovery, which was have you ever been there?
I've just heard of it. It's all about drumming, isn't it?
Yeah, it's drumming, but there's also some percussion, and that's an interesting, little place to go to. It's not, it definitely isn't a place to go to just to look at.
Right.
You know, just to watch. It's worth it if you want to let me see, I want to sit down at this set of drums and see if I could play, because they have a couple of those kind of things as well. But you find some things to do. You're definitely going to find lots of things to do there. That's for sure. Just that park alone.
Yes.
Is something else. When I took the Segway tour, I didn't realize, how much is just the amount of attractions that you can take in just in that area.
And I think that Indianapolis, if I'm not mistaken, is the second largest city for war memorials in the country outside of Washington, D.C. We have more memorials to war and the military than any place else, because obviously Monument Circle, the monument in the middle of the circle, is a monument to this Civil War, to the Indiana soldiers that were in the Civil War. And then if you go north a few blocks, there's the World War I Memorial, which is a huge monolithic structure that looks like something out of a Indiana Jones movie, and there's surrounding parks and fountains and other memorials, and the national headquarters of the American Legion is right on that greenway where the World War I Memorial is. So there's a lot of interesting things to see in downtown Indianapolis, and we're just very fortunate that Studio 2000 is in the middle of it all, and we every time we walk out for lunch or clients come to see us, it's everybody's always knocked out about how clean and how nice downtown is. There's always easy parking.
I have to tell you something. It was actually very weird because I happened at the time I was standing where there was some construction being done, and I had a piece of paper in my hand. I had something from a wrapper, and I just like looked on the ground because I was curious to see. Do people throw things on the ground? And I looked around. I went, oh my God, there's no one throw things on the ground, even in the construction area. And for me, I mean, in New York, it's just a habit that I don't. I mean, I just think, what's the big deal if I take the wrapper, put it in my pocket, and when I get someplace where there's a garbage bill, throw in the garbage bill. So I don't tend to throw things, you know, onto the ground. But I do notice, like, places where, you know, where things are clean, and I said, wow, that's interesting that there's no litter.
Yeah, and, you know, the nice thing about downtown Indianapolis, and Indianapolis as a whole, is it's a great community and corporate partnership. There's, you know, so many companies that are headquartered in downtown, and they take a real interest in how the city is maintained, and there's all kinds of you know, large foundations that have donated money to keep our city beautiful, and it's a great feel amongst the citizens to be proud of our city, and our downtown is kind of our crown jewel, and it's very clean and very safe. I always tell people who are coming in from out of town to our spa that you know, you can walk anywhere in downtown safely. It's very safe, and we see a lot of women that come in for everything from class reunions or sorority reunions or get-togethers or girls' weekends out where you've got five or six or eight gals that get together in a hotel and just have a weekend together away from the kids and the husbands, and they will ask us, you know, where can we go, what's there to do, and geez, there's so many nightclubs and restaurants and great things to do, all within walking distance of Studio 2000. That I always suggest they get a hotel close by. They can come to the spa more often, and they can walk to all the nightclubs and all the great places to eat. And we have a wonderful mall in the downtown with great shopping. And if you want to play billiards, or if you want to shop at Nordstrom, or if you want to smoke a cigar, or if you want to have a cocktail, or if you want to go to something like the Rhythm Place, there's always something for everyone. And the Children's Museum is close by, too.
Well, I also just want to throw in, because the show's going to end soon, but I also want to throw in that men go to the spa, too.
Absolutely.
Leroy was there, and what did he have? He had he had no nails for you to give him a manicure.
I think Leroy had, he had a deep tissue massage and a manicure pedicure.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah, because
we see a lot of men, not only for their hair care, but a lot of, I think our number one profession of our clients is an attorney or judge. And that's a high pressure job in some cases. And a lot of them come in to help relieve stress. A lot of people these days work on laptops and Blackberries, so they're scrunched over with their shoulders tightly together so they can get to the little keyboards. And it creates a lot of pressure in your upper extremities. And they come to us for relief. A deep tissue massage or hot stone massage usually cures that. But more and more men are taking better care of themselves, both their skin and their feet and their nails, just because it's something that gives you a great feeling, and it's good preventative maintenance for many problems.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to cut you short because I see I got a minute to go. And
it's been a pleasure, Merle.
Yes, Kevin, and I have the information up on my on the site here.
Please come and visit Studio 2000 Spot Cut.
Yes, and yes. Oh, well, thank you for calling in, and have a wonderful, great evening.
Thank you, Merle.
Bye.
Bye.
Yes, and tomorrow I'm going to be doing another show. Yeah. Tomorrow.